for the benefit of those with flash photography.
All right. Let's do it. Welcome to DreamWork. I am Colin Delaney. In a moment, you will hear the voice of my tag team partner. His name is Cheech, and this is DreamWork, a podcast about tag team wrestling by a real live tag team. Anyways, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here this week. I don't think I have any housekeeping to take care of up front. Not like we got sponsors or anything crazy like that. We had a weekend off, so nothing really to cover. Coming up, we do have AIW next weekend, and I will be at the Polycult party after that. But we will get to that probably more next week, maybe even the week after that. So this week, all I really got to talk about is this week's tag team. And this week's team is Wolfie D and JC Ice PG-13. If you are not familiar, you should get familiar. They are a true journeyman tag team of the 90s into the early 2000s. They wrestled for WWF, WCW, ECW. Wolfie D even wrestled for TNA. So they were everywhere. They just, outside of USWA, which they were huge in, they never really, I guess, got that big break. They were used everywhere because, you know, their talent was undeniable, but when it came down to it, you know, on the bigger stage, they never really, I don't know, took off. So it was great to cover a team like that and to dip back into USWA footage, which admittedly I haven't seen much of before this, but there's a crap ton of USWA TV on YouTube, like full episodes. So if after listening to this you feel so inclined, USWA in like 95, 96 looks crazy because they were doing interpromotional stuff with WWF at the time. So anyways, that is neither here nor there. What is here, what is there, is Wolfie D and JC Ice PG-13. Yo.
Exactly. At this point, I'm like, oh, wait, I didn't remember any of the words to their raps.
I don't have any of them either, but they weren't the same, right? They were innovators. They were John Cena before John Cena. They were Max Caster before Max Caster.
No, they definitely were, but okay, maybe I thought, I think they reused a couple lines. They recycled, we'll say.
That's probably true. I mean, I'm not sure freestyling was really hot then as it eventually became. Those were probably a little more thought out.
Not that either of us would know, because neither of us are deep in the freestyle rap community.
What are you talking about?
We'll assume that.
What are you talking about? I'm with it. I'm hip. I am up on all things. A current day, as the kids say.
You can be that and not be in a freestyle rapping. But regardless, we are talking about two guys who were a tag team who were all about freestyle rapping. We're talking about PG-13, JC Ice and Wolfie D.
Man, I don't want to give it away too early, but I think I'm just going to go ahead and say it right out the rip. I'm not sure I've related to a team as hard as I related to PG-13.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Spoiler. That's throwing me for a loop right early too. What are you doing? Me, the audience, everybody, we're all on tilt now.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to get that out there. I had a long week. So I got a lot of my watching all down at once and I was like, wow, what a team. PG-13.
Okay, well then here, we know your ending thoughts, basically. Let's go, we can go preliminary thoughts, then let's go the opposite. We know where you ended. Where did you start?
I was excited. I mean, I'm I would say more loosely familiar. I've seen PG-13 in the past, but like with a lot of these teams, like, yeah, I'm familiar. Yeah, I've seen them and I've you know, I'm familiar with them, but sitting down and studying them in this way is a whole different animal. So even though I've seen them, like, nothing about them stood out in my mind going into this, you know? Like, I didn't have something where I was like, oh yeah, well, I remember they did this or I remember this. Basically what I remembered was they rapped with the Nation, and that's, you know, I can vaguely see them wrestling, but that's it.
Okay, see, my preliminary thoughts were a little different. I was excited because, yeah, I'd seen a little bit of them. I'm not as familiar with things like the Memphis scene that much, so I was excited about that. But what was I going to say? What was the point you just made? Because it made me think of something.
Just how, you know, with a lot of these teams, like, I'm familiar from back in the day. I know the name, and I've seen them wrestle for sure, but nothing sticks out in my mind.
Okay, now I remember. Yes, yes, yes. In ring-wise, yes, I'm kind of the same wavelength, but I'm sure I'm like other people who gained a newfound, I wouldn't say respect, more notoriety of J.C. Ice and all his wacky shoot interviews he did recently on, like, those U-shoots that you'd see on YouTube. You'd see all these wacky clips. And I was like, who is this guy? I was like, well, I mean, I know who he is, but, like, his real-life persona, I'm just like, holy crap. So I was like, it made me more intrigued about him, the person, and the wrestler. So that was, I think, that maybe tipped me a little higher than you were in anticipation.
I passed by those shoot clips on YouTube over and over again, and I was like, should I watch these? But I passed them up.
See, I was always a big fan of those. Like, I have a tub full of, like, shoot interview tapes. I was always big on those. So I remember with those, they were on YouTube, so it was even easier. So I had seen it a bunch of times, and yeah, he's quite a guest.
Jamie Dundee, right? Son of Bill Dundee.
Exactly. That's the other thing. I'm also a fan of Bill Dundee from my limited exposure, which is only growing more and more, but still. So I was like, okay, his son. And I was like, all right, yeah, they're definitely talkers.
Yeah, yeah. And Wolfie D, who I totally forgot went on to become Slash of the New Church in early TNA.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which, we'll get into that. I am getting way ahead of myself. This podcast is going to be called Colin Gets Way Ahead of Himself.
All right. Well, then what's next before we get too far ahead?
Well, the next thing we would do is go over their championships and accomplishments.
All right. Bring them on. Bring them on.
I think you might be surprised. This is Colin getting ahead of himself again.
Okay.
So they are, first of all, they are one-time Wing International Tag Team Champs. That was a wacky one. And then they are 16-time USWA Tag Team Champions.
Go on.
That's it. That's it. They are the Ric Flair of the Memphis tag team wrestling scene. 16-time!
Okay, at which point am I supposed to be surprised?
16 times!
Well, funny enough, that doesn't strike me as too crazy. And the funny thing was, I saw one of the matches, I think I saw the match where they won the Wing tag team titles. So, I knew that one.
Wow. So, I had seen in my looking through things that they were Wing International Tag Team Champions. I was like, oh. Interesting. What a fun little nugget. And then 16 time. I mean, when you're going through the cage match, it feels like every other episode of TV was a title change. But 16 time is still a lot.
It definitely is. And you're not wrong on the point you made before that, too. It did seem like there were a lot of title switches.
Yeah. So, yeah, they didn't. They never made a list per se, which we'll get into it. That feels a little shorted. That feels a little bias. Light for my guys here.
Big league bias, big league bias.
Yeah. So for sure. I would agree with that. I think, a Smoky Mountain championship and maybe a WCW Cruiserweight Tag Championship would have sent that over the edge. But I digress. 16-time USWA Tag Champ is nothing to sneeze at.
Absolutely not. You know what I mean? That's just proof of longevity as well, which in a place like Memphis where you work so much, like think about how many people were in and out of Memphis. They were like motherfuckers.
Right. Also, USWA, for people who don't know, was like the Memphis territory through the 90s and had a working relationship with the WWF. So there's a lot of cross promotion there and a lot of wacky matchups that became of that. But it's not like USWA is just some random indie. It's not like they were 16-time Joe Blow indie promotion in Indiana tag champs. That's USWA was big stuff in the mid-90s.
It was probably, I'm sure there could be cases made. I believe Puerto Rico went a little longer, but like Memphis was the longest lasting territory. So even when you're saying in the 90s, like it's not the glory days, but it's still definitely like a full-time promotion. It's definitely not an indie that's on the weekends. Like they're full-time there. And you know, their titles were recognized. You know what I mean? They were in the back of all the PWIs and everything. They were nationally recognized as a big league. Well, okay, I wouldn't say big league. They were a big league regional promotion.
Yeah, I mean, so it would recognize WWF and WCW, but USWA was in that tier just after that with all those other places. And, you know, guys like Jeff Jarrett, guys like Brian Christopher, Jerry Lawler, of course, it wasn't like, I don't know, I just think when you look at it on paper at this point, you're like, USWA. What is that even? But it was that's serious. That's real deal.
Yeah, you just have to look at, maybe it's not huge in notoriety, but the sheer fact that you can be full time there, you wrestle enough matches during the week that you're busy, you make money. Like that's maybe as a fan, it's one thing, but I know like me as a wrestler, I was like, oh, if that was something that was available, that's like a big thing.
Yeah, that would rule today. I would kill for that today. And you know, they were probably making good money, and they went all over. They were, you know, they,
I don't know about making good money. Memphis was not a place for good money, but I know what you mean.
But they, you know, they were wrestling full time, and they literally touched everywhere. They in the 90s, they hit the big three. They hit all three.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. As I kept watching and watching, I was like, wow, like for just two random dudes from, you know, the hood in Tennessee, they definitely did a lot.
Yeah, most of Tennessee is the hood, for the record.
I would have no idea.
I'm just kidding, just the big cities. All right, let's get into the matches that we watched. You wanna shoot first, or you want me to? I think my list is probably a bit shorter than yours. I went straight YouTube. By the time you gave me those links, I tried to dig through them, but I'd already watched a decent amount, so I was like, eh.
I too had watched a decent amount before I found that USWA hookup.
Not for nothing, I'm gonna go back and watch some of those because just looking through the results, I was like, oh, some of these look awesome.
Dude, we'll get there. We'll get there.
I'll kick us off because my list probably isn't as robust as yours. So I'll go first and then you can follow me up. So I started with a match against JD Steele and Bill Rush from 93 in USWA. Went on to a match against the White Tiger and Ricky Hutchinson, also USWA, 93. Then moved on to the Eliminators at the Mid-South Coliseum in 94. Then against Far Too Wild, which I believe is Chris Michaels, 1994 USWA. Then I got straight into their WWF debut match against Al Brown and Sonny Rogers, followed by their match against the Smoking Guns from WWF in 1995. I went straight to the Dudleys at Hardcore Heaven 97. And then I watched a random match against the real Double J, Jesse James, the Road Dog, and Steve Dunn of Well Done And then I went to their WCW stuff and I watched a match of them against Three Count, followed by them against the Mamalukes, both from the year 2000.
All right, all right. Yeah, we definitely had some crossover. All right. I started off hot with the Smoking Guns match from the Raw in 95.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, that was there. I was like, all right, let me see where they are in 95. Or I just saw WWF, and I was like, all right, maybe I thought there'd be more. I don't know. We'll get to it. Then I saw the Far Too Wild match from 94 in USWA. Then I watched the Tommy Rich and the Doug Gilbert match from USWA. I don't know. That's probably 95, I think. I didn't get a date on it. Then I saw them versus the Masters of Terror, which really is Nobutaka Araya and Winger from Japan. And I believe that's the match where they win the Wing titles. And we'll get into that. I know the Wing hook up there. Then I saw the Mamalukes match from Worldwide in 2000, which is the Mamalukes of Johnny the Bull and Vito, Big Vito LaGrasso. Then I saw the Dudleys match from Hardcore 97. Then I saw a WCW match with them versus Crowbar and David Flair from a WCW on Saturday Night in 2000. Then the Hickersons in USWA 95. Jeff Jarrett and Brian Christopher, which just ended up being versus Brian Christopher in USWA in 93. Jeff Gaylord and Mike Anthony from USWA in 93. Spike Dudley and Mikey from ECW TV July 97. A Hardy Boys match from Smoky Mountain 95.
Wow.
A Heavenly Bodies 95 USWA. Yellow Jacket and Scorpion. I was just interested in who the heck they were from a USWA 95. Jesse James Armstrong and Tracy Smothers match, which is Road Dogg, from USWA 96. And then Rock and Roll Express, I believe it was 95, a Texas Death Match.
Oh, I started that, and the footage didn't look like something that I would be able to continue to watch.
Oh, maybe there were different versions you saw, because the one I saw was pretty good. I must have had a different upload.
Any of the ones that I clicked on where it started VHS sketchy, I was like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to pay attention. I'm gonna keep moving. There's so much random stuff you can find. I'm just gonna keep moving.
Well, see, what happened to me was, like I said, I had watched a lot of like those just random singles or just straight up just single match tags on YouTube, and I was like, no, I know there. I've been too scared to venture. I've been somewhat a fan from afar. I'm a huge fan of the documentary Memphis Heat. I've watched it a bajillion times and the bonus disc, but I've never really jumped into like full on Memphis like TV because I was afraid, but I'd heard good stuff on like other podcasts and stuff. But I was always like, I'm not going to find it if it finds me. And then I found all those USWA TVs and I was like, oh, I may get this trip to Memphis for me may stick around for a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you. So I started to try and I was looking through results, but then you have to like to get to the specific match, you got to find it on the TV. And I was like, I've already watched some matches. This is going to take me some time, but I saw wrestle the Heavenly Bodies for like 2 months straight. And I was like, oh, I'll watch all of those eventually.
Dude, not even that. It's they're 45 minute episodes.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god. It's there's so much promo work. It's amazing. And I'm just like, "Oh dear lord, I'm going to have to go back and watch all of these."
And in as we were saying earlier, in like 95, 96, they had a working relationship. USWA was like basically a developmental, right?
Basically, yep. And then also in 95, they were feuding with Smoky Mountain, so you had all that crossover. I think it was like 95 and 96.
Yeah, my buddy Eric Wayne from down in the Memphis area said, you know, when he was growing up, his dad is Nightmare Ken Wayne, grandson of Buddy Wayne. And he said his grandpa had like a ring in his backyard and guys would like, WF guys would like train there. They'd get sent down to Memphis to the Wayne backyard.
Oh, I could imagine.
So, those TV episodes from like 95, 96 are inevitably all incredible.
Yeah, man. It's just fun just seeing like just weird off the cuff, just promos of, you know what I mean? Like something I thought, which just the chance to cut a promo or to be in a feud that goes week to week or more than one match. I wonder, unfortunately, because we're on the indies, and, you know, here we are. We're a tag team talking about tag teams. So I say it's odd for us in a position. We don't have that position that they do to just have off-the-cuff interviews, to be in long-term programs and storylines. I wonder if there are guys right now on the indies who would be perfect, but you will never know it because we're on an indies where you're in a promotion once a month and every match means something. So you can't, even though they're all cold matchups, usually you're never really in a program. It just made me wonder so much because I was like, wow, it's such a different slant, I felt, on wrestling.
Yeah.
Compared to today, at least. I mean,
but 100%. And that's, I don't know. And this is a much deeper, different, off subject conversation, but like WWE runs weekly television, but they do not run weekly television like wrestling ran television for its entirety of its life, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yes, it is a deeper conversation, but I'm just saying, in the midst of this is obviously going to be a pretty heavy Memphis, because that's what they were. Yes, we obviously are going to talk about their WWF, their ECW stuff. That was both fun things, but you know, at the end of the day, they are tattooed in Memphis.
Oh, my God. And I could not have loved it any more if I tried. especially when they exit Memphis and they go to those other places. But let's start in Memphis. Let's go. Let's get ourselves back in 93, 94, PG-13, kind of first hitting the scene. The first match I watched, first couple matches were like job matches, basically just TV 93 job matches, because 93 is really where they start.
Yes.
I mean, they are they're basically a cruiserweight tag team, which in 1993-1994 is an anomaly, right?
Yes, you've had their obviously smaller guys, like you'll see them wrestle, you know, like, what was it, that Mike Anthony guy's not that big. They all have such wacky, generic 80s names. What was the other guy's name? Oh, Chris Michaels and Todd Morton. Like, once again, like, technically, those guys may have been cruiserweights as well, or at least in that realm. They were definitely close to the 220 mark, all these guys.
Flirting with 200 pounds.
Yeah, they're all flirting between 200 and a little bit more. So, yeah, technically they're all cruiserweight teams, but they were actually, I don't know, seemed slightly more innovative. All the other guys just struck me as generic 80s, like high-flying, which meant arm drags and drop kicks. These guys were actually putting wrinkles on it. They were actually innovative for 95.
And it, so going back to like 93, because 93 when they hit the scene they were heels.
As far back as there, yeah, even as far back as 93, all their stuff they were innovative.
What I loved when I was first watching them in these, like, even in these little TV job matches against nobodies, against straight up Bill Rush, come on, and Ricky Hutchinson, they spend most of the match flip flop flying around, putting the other team over, making them look good.
Okay, keep going, because my viewpoint's a little different.
Which is great for them, and it like they look so good doing it, and so they put these other guys over, but because they are so proficient in the bump and feed and quick movements and moving all around the ring, they're putting the other guys over, but making themselves look good in turn. It's one of those things that, like, you don't know why you're drawn to them instead, but you're drawn to them instead, even though they are putting the other guys over, even though they are letting the other guys get all the offense.
Okay. See, I agree with that. Okay, you said you started with the early stuff, correct? You went more chronological like you normally do?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Like I said, I start off with, like, some of their bigger stuff. Like, I saw I started with the WWF with the Raw. Then, like, Far Too Wild, just because I was like, oh, let me see USWA stuff. And then I was like, oh, with Rich and Gilbert, because that's, you know, big names. But those were all a little bit 95. But same thing what you're saying. My initial thought was I only knew them as bad guys just taking a bunch of moves. And the first few matches I saw were a bunch of bad guys just taking a bunch of moves. And I was like, eh. But when I dipped into the 93 stuff, I go, oh, they're young and spry. And for some reason, I don't know if I was reading it wrong, a lot of times they came off babyface in a lot of these situations. So they're like, okay, they're either hitting a million moves or they're just taking a million moves. But seeing them so early taking all these moves, I was like, ugh. But when I dipped into 93, I was like, oh, they're young, they're baby faces, they're hitting all the moves. I was like, what a breath of fresh air. I saw JC chain wrestling. You saw him actually doing high spots. But early on, I saw him doing nothing. So it was 93 was great for me when I went back. But since you started with that, it's a little different. I was more like, okay, he just takes a bunch of, oh, wow, he can do stuff.
So I started with the early stuff of them just being bad guy heels, but still putting over the job team baby faces. And then I went to that them against the Eliminators from 94, where they are now baby faces. And you realize that the same thing that made them good heels also makes them good baby faces. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, they... You will only know that by watching and digging into matches like this, unless you were lucky enough to maybe watch their careers. We weren't really. We only saw it when it was got to, you know, national TV. But yeah, when you dig into something like this, like we did, and you watch like 10 plus matches, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, they do play. They can swing from both sides of the plate.
And the same, you know, the same thing that makes them such great heels in those early matches, you flip the script and you're like, oh, those same skills also translate to them being amazing baby faces. And if I can real quick, you know, in Memphis in those first couple matches, you're like, oh yeah, I can tell that they're, you know, they're not the biggest guys. They're probably like 215, but you know, and then you see them against the Eliminators in 94, who are gigantic human beings. And you're like, oh my God, these guys are tiny.
Yeah, no, they are. I'm mad. I didn't see the Eliminators match. I kept missing it. I saw it, but I never actually got to it.
I've never seen the Eliminators that early, period. So seeing the Eliminators that early, period, was fun. And then seeing them against PG-13, at PG-13 as baby faces, the Eliminators as these big shit-kicking, like, not taking bumps for how small they are.
You know? That happened a lot. One of the things they did, which I grew to admire, was, like in the Raw match, they go for a double back elbow on Billy Gunn, who, of course, you know, we all know nowadays is a giant man. He doesn't fall down. So then they had the leg sweep, and I was like, oh, is that like some big league stuff? I go, no, that's their spot. They get it. They're that smart. Like, they, if there's, okay. I don't know if many people, this may be too inside baseball, but if there's a team that gets it, this team gets it.
Yeah. No. Oh my God. Yeah. So also, before we get past the Eliminators, I would like to make a quick... Burt Prentice was the manager of the Eliminators in 1994, and we just lost Burt Prentice.
Okay. Shout out.
I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, no. I know we lost him, but I didn't see the Eliminators match.
Yeah, Burt Prentice was like a old school Memphis guy, has been promoting USA wrestling for like decades since it all, you know, since everything kind of fell apart down in Memphis. But Burt Prentice was one of the guys who kept running strong throughout, like a staple in the Memphis community. So I was like, oh, man, Burt just passed last week. And it's like, I definitely did not think I was going to just stumble upon a Burt Prentice match this week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I know he was big in Memphis. I know he was holding it down.
Oh, my God, yeah, for sure. Everyone who's ever been through Memphis has, like, probably too many Burt Prentice stories. But, yeah, shout out to Burt Prentice, RIP. So I moved along. So Eliminators 94, Far Too Wild. You watched some Far Too Wild, which...
How could you not with the name, like, Far Too Wild? We have to figure out our sweet 80s... rock and roll name at some point. Not on the show, it's too much pressure, but yeah, Far Too Wild. I was like, oh yes, I need to see this. And I go, I need to know their names. There's definitely one of them is Michaels.
Far Too Wild with a two, not T-O, the number two.
Yeah, and they're fringe, obviously.
Chris Michaels still wrestles.
Oh, I'm sure. I wouldn't be surprised if half these guys still wrestle.
I don't know about Todd Morton, but I know Chris Michaels does.
Tommy Rich does. He wrestled in AI Dub a couple of months ago.
Yeah, that's true. Did you watch the Far Too Wild one that was just on YouTube?
Yes.
It's mostly Shine. They loved PG-13. Let me tell you what. They love to get beat up. Like you were saying earlier, they either love to get beat up or they love to hit moves.
Yeah, it's 100% one way or the other. It's so crazy. But so fun to watch. They knew what they were doing either way.
I wish I'm going to send you the link after we're done with this. Because after I got out of this 94 Memphis, instead of going to the Smoking Guns, I went to the match they had in WWF, their WWF debut, which is right before they wrestled the Smoking Guns. And it's them against two jobbers. I don't think I've ever seen a team hit more double team moves in 3 minutes than I watched PG-13. It's nuts.
Which is so crazy because, like I said, the first few matches I watched, they don't do too much. So it blew my mind when all of a sudden you'd see them hit like three double teams in a match. You're like, what?
Three double teams? You watch them give Al Brown and Sonny Rogers three double teams apiece.
Oh, I know. It's great. And the double teams were so wacky, like the atomic drop heart attack clothesline, but at different times, the double bulldog, the big finish of the tilt-a-whirl slam my partner onto the other guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. I wrote this down very early, and I'm gonna double back to it because it probably applies more now than ever. They were definitely where Brian Christopher stole too much from, right?
I couldn't say that because I'm sure there was a lot of that type of stuff in Memphis before them.
They are actual Memphis too much / too cool. They are too much / too cool in actual Memphis. Like, yes. Too much too cool was like Memphis tagged. We already covered them and we discussed that they are like a Memphis tag team, but in the WWF, WWE, whereas PG-13 was literally them before them in actual Memphis.
Oh yes. They walked so Too Cool could run.
100%. They were doing the strut and the dance and they had the thing with little hip bump.
Oh bro, the hip bump.
It was awesome. But I right away, yeah, and I thought it, and then I was like, whatever. And then they would do things that exactly Brian Christopher would do in WWF match. And I'm like, oh my God, this is where it comes from.
I don't know if it's necessarily, okay, I'm sure if he has Jamie Dundee, he'll be like, that motherfucker stole everything. But I just feel like that's a lot of the Memphis style as well.
All right, so on the line right now, we have Jamie Dundee. Jamie Dundee, did that motherfucker steal from you?
Let me tell you, that little motherfucker, he done stole everything on me. I fucking hate him. I fucking hate his guts. I hate his daddy. I hate his daddy's daddy. I hate his guts, and I hate them all.
Thank you, Jamie Dundee. Yeah, so according to Jamie Dundee, he stole it all. But while I'm watching it, I'm like, man, this is very too much, too cool. It's both in one tag team and actual Memphis, you know? So I was like, oh, interesting.
Oh, no, it definitely was. It definitely was. They, like I said, yeah, 100%. They walked so John Cena could run. They walked so Max Caster could run. Oh, it was just so good. And here's the best part. Like, yeah, they were rappers, quote unquote. But if Jamie got the mic, it was just straight stand-up comedy. It was yo mama jokes. It's you too fat jokes. You're too slutty jokes. Like, it was, I was like, he's not rapping. He's just a comedian.
So, if you had to guess what the first three words I wrote in my notes for the Smoking Guns match, what would you guess those three words were?
Billy is so big.
Tennessee tiptoe.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, that happened. You want to know my first note was here. That was my second note. My first note was Billy is so big. I assumed the guy in the ring was JC, but it was Wolfie.
And Wolfie, at that point, so Wolfie, we talked about it with a couple people, like watching them. Oh, like last week, we were talking about Harry Smith.
Exactly.
Or with British Bulldog, watching him just go from being a little guy to just being this big dude. By the end of this thing, Wolfie D is big, big.
Oh, yeah, I know. But you watch that early stuff, you're like, oh, my God, that is a child.
And they are 100% interchangeable.
Oh, yes.
In those early matches, unless they said the name of who was in the ring, I was like, oh, okay.
Well, there was the height difference. Obviously, Wolfie was always taller. But, yeah, like in the WWF match, I watch him going because they're wearing they're one of the times where they have like same colored shorts on. And I was watching. I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, oh, wait, that's Wolfie. I go, I just assumed. But I was like, oh, yeah, that's how big Billy Gunn is. Another one, when I watched them, and the Memphis rings were smaller as well anyway. You don't realize how big Road Dogg is. When he gets in with Jamie Ice, he looks like a giant in those Memphis rings. I was like, and he's wrestling with no shirt on with him and Tracy? Oh, I was like, who is this Jesse James guy?
Oh, God, yeah. But yeah, first thing I wrote for Smoking Guns was Tennessee Tiptoe. I went nuts for it. I was like, yes, hell yeah. And then, like, the it is, like, expert-level chicken shit heel work.
Okay. Now, I'm sure it's out there. You didn't watch, it was not on your list. You did not see them versus Spike and Mikey, did you?
No, I wanted to. I saw it on the thing and I saw it was on a hardcore TV, but I didn't get to it.
Colin. All right, well, here. We talked about WWE. We said we're going to hit them all. Let's get to their ECW run.
Yes.
This match with, I'm putting this out there. I'm making a call to the internet. I know the fan cams exist. Who do I know in WWE? I want the complete compendium of PG-13 versus Spike and Mikey. Because they had like 8 tag matches or something like on some loop. And only one made it to TV. But they went and Jamie hits all his stuff and all this Memphis stuff. And I was like, there's no way Spike and Mikey got this, just walked right into this. It must have been you know, night by night, just adding stuff, and Spike and Mikey just had to learn Memphis 101 from these guys. Because by the end, oh my gosh, one of the high spots is Mikey gives him the testicular claw on Jamie, and then like Jamie pulls himself away, but it hurts. He powders, grabs the mic, and starts cutting a promo all high pitch. You motherfucker! Why you grab my boss? How dare you grab my boss? You motherfucker! The crowd is eating out of his hands. They do a spot which, it's not the Tennessee Tiptoe. It's with elbow drops and pin covers, and it's amazing. I'm sure you've seen, there's a clip of it and a gif of it. I definitely have it somewhere. They hit all their stuff. I need someone to get me the lineage of that tag match.
Yeah, so I saw it on Cage Match, and I saw that they wrestled, like, they probably wrestled 15, 20 times in, like, a span. But, yeah, only one of them made hardcore TV, which is a bummer. And also, like, so then you also watch Hardcore Heaven, right?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So then they're kind of the baby faces at Hardcore Heaven after all this.
Well, it's because they're in there with the Dudleys, who are the biggest heels. You know what I mean? They've got Gertner cuts the long-ass promo and blah, blah, blah. They got Jenna Jameson with them. But my favorite is nothing says counterculture, extreme wrestling, 1997 Hardcore Heaven, and JC cuts the promo, and like the payoff on the promo he cuts on Jenna Jameson is he imitates Beavis from Beavis and Butthead, and the crowd goes bananas. Hey, you know what I got to say to you, girl? Hey, baby. And the crowd goes bonkers. I was like, holy shit, what world is this?
And then crisscross, slide out of the ring, make out with Jenna Jameson is a full-on spot in that match.
Bro, Jamie Ice's run in ECW, I just want to see. He brought a whole new everything. He had those people eating out of his hand.
And then, what else did they do in that match, Cheech?
I don't know what.
They do a Memphis water pump!
Oh, yes, obviously you saw that coming. I saw that coming a mile away.
Dude, right when they start doing it, I was like, oh my God, these guys, we get a Tennessee Tiptoe in the WWF, and now we get a water pump in ECW?
Dude, that's the thing. And that's why it worked out really good. Like the first few matches I saw, they just didn't do much. And I was like, and then all of a sudden it just exploded. And I was like, this is great.
They brought Memphis to the mainstream, man. They were like, those are some old school Memphis spots, and they were like, "Yeah, we bring him to mainstream," and I was loving it.
Yeah, or the, you know, Jamie gets bumped, he crawls on his knees over and hugs the, you know, Wolfie's, you know, pelvis area, and everybody blah blah blah. Oh, it's just so much shtick. It's great.
Oh, it's incredible. So, if I can get back to the first point I made,
go for it.
So this team that we're talking about, they are good as heels. They're good as baby faces for basically the same reason. And they can interchange literally week to week if you need them to. They incorporate Memphis spots of old that are kind of potentially forgotten. And they have a bunch of wacky double teams. Who's that sound like to you, Cheech?
I don't know. It doesn't sound familiar at all. It doesn't ring close to home.
I was like, man, this team, if there's ever been a team in this thing that I can relate to, it is PG-13. They were hitting me in all the right notes, and I was like, man, I get them. I get this team.
You know, it's funny when I think about how they're good baby or baby face or good guy or bad guy, we'll say, I kept equating them to like Stone Cold, because I was like, they don't really change. It's just they're italicized. They're slightly a little crooked.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was great. And then we move along to I would love to hear the tale of how they even got into WCW in the year 2000. Like, because there's got to be some kind of wacky story about it. Look up the Yushu and find me what Jamie Dundee says the story is, because they weren't doing a whole lot. And then all of a sudden, they are in the WCW late era cruiserweight tag team division.
With Frog randomly, whoever that was. I'm sure it was someone, but yeah, Frog.
I clicked on him. Nope, he was something. His indie name was something Toad, like,
yeah,
Kevin Toad. And then he just was Frog. And but yeah, wrestling guys like the Three Count and the Young Dragons.
And Crowbar and David Flair.
I almost clicked on that one. I did not.
Here's the thing. Crowbar is always fun.
You didn't watch the Three Count match. Do you know what they do in the Three Count match?
No, I missed the Three Count. What'd they do? I wanted to see it.
A Tennessee Tiptoe?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know.
In 2000?
They're from Tennessee.
Listen, that Three Count match is a treasure. The Mamalukes match, the Mamalukes at the time were tag champs, which was blowing my mind. We're covering PG-13, which is basically the job team in this situation, and the Mamalukes were the tag champs? What's happening?
Yeah, and if I remember, that match wasn't even all that bad.
No, it's not bad. It's actually pretty fun.
I wouldn't say it's great, but it's definitely a fun tag match. I was like, oh, and it went well. Like, I kept thinking, like, oh, here's where it's going to end. Oh, no, here's where it's going to end. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it takes some twists and turns on you. You know what they do for an all four down in the Three Count match?
What's that?
Everyone consecutively does no water in the pool.
Yeah, that was big in 2000.
It was great. It was great.
But, okay, another thing I want to point out is, something, of course, that we love. Yeah, they have these great matches, yada, yada, yada. The finishes are, like, smart, clever, creative. Like, the Far Too Wild match is great because, what did I put? Oh, the one manager stops the other manager from cheating, so the guy's distracted by his manager not getting the cheat. He gets rolled up 1, 2, 3. And I was like, oh. And then, a revelation I found. The manager I found and connected with was Brandon Baxter. Did you see this guy at all?
Which one was?
You would know him. He has bleach blonde long hair and cuts promos, and he's the manager, dressed like a pretty boy. I was like, who is this guy? But they had some spot where like he kept messing up. He kept messing up interfering. Until it actually backfired on the guys. I was like, but like on the fourth try, I was like, who the heck does that? That's crazy.
Sometimes those finishes, like even the far too wild one, like the ref takes forever to get on that finish, and it's like, come on, man. Like, if the timing on that thing was good, that's a good finish. But the timing on that thing was junk.
Yeah, or the one of the matches, it was the I think it was the Rock and Roller. No, it might have been the Tracy and Armstrong one, where like they kept messing up the powder in the eyes, but it wasn't the finish. It would be like powder in their eyes, 1-2, and the guy would kick out, or then the next guy would get powder in the eyes, you'd be like, oh, well, here it is, and then it'd be 1-2, break up, and I'd be like, and then they'd go into some other finish. I was like, wow, they actually have like creative finishes to their matches. I was like, which you wouldn't expect in 95. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, it's they weren't lowest common denominator guys. They would, you know, the powder of the eyes a lot of times is like, oh, I don't know what we're going to do for a finish. You want us to do powder in the eyes, you know, especially in that era. So for them to use it as a false was kind of probably a big deal in like 95, 96.
I just, as I'm watching it and everything, because once again, they don't treat their fans as dumb and they're in front of the same people every week. They have to act like the stuff has to evolve. But it just, I don't want to go like, once again, not a tangent, but I'm just saying, like, compared to what we see on TV today, like, no, it's, if there's going to be powder used, it's going to be one specific scenario and it's just going to go down one specific way. I almost felt cheated when I'm watching this. I was like, oh my gosh, how fun would it be to see actual creativity with a powder spot? But no, if you watch TV nowadays, you know, WWF stuff, it's like, these guys, they were just creative because they had to be. They were in front of the same crowd for a decade.
Sure, and probably had a little bit of the freedom to be, and were doing it every night so they could see what was working, what wasn't working, and they knew that it worked. It probably worked the last time they did it, and so they could see that turning it a little bit would work even better.
Or a perfect example, the Texas Deathmatch with Rock and Roll Express. The like, sure, there's some jawing and some a little bit of kerfuffle at the beginning, but literally it's almost like a couple punches, a brawl for a sec. Ricky Sunset's JC, literally first move of the match, reaches into his pocket, throws his powder in his face, pins him 1-2-3. But it's Texas Deathmatch, so will he respond by 10? Yeah, obviously. They had like 4 falls in like the first 2 to 3 minutes, and I was like, that would never happen anywhere nowadays.
Right. Also, people would be confused. They wouldn't. If you think a wrestling fan nowadays can understand a Texas Deathmatch, you're crazy.
Well, if you put it over strong enough and beat it over their head like they did, but I was just, it really blew my mind. I was like, oh snap, that's just really creative that they did, you know, the first falls out of nowhere. And then, like, a minute later, another fall and another fall. And I go, wow, like, and another thing. We're all in the age of Botchamania. We know I am the table. Okay, Japanese tables ain't got nothing on Memphis table. They bring in, it literally looks like someone's dining room table. And just straight up, they're doing numerous spots. Like, Wolfie gives Ricky Moore not one, but two, just, they both are standing on there. The thing doesn't budge. 2 DDTs. There's like a pot. They're straight up just wrestling on it. There's no expectation that they're going to go through it.
Right. They're just at that point having a wrestling match on top of a kitchen table.
It's crazy.
I love it. I do love it. I honestly love it.
And then the finish is, of course, once again, Texas Deathmatch. Right? It goes like a bunch of guys brawl out from the back. Tracy comes out and hits JC over the face with a bottle, 1-2-3, doesn't make it by the 10. Because even I was like, how are they going to finish this?
P.S. I can see PG-13 in my mind celebrating getting that first fall.
Oh, of course. It was great, because that's the thing. And it was a long match, but I was like, oh, every fall they do the 30 seconds in between. So I was like, oh, it's an 18-minute match, but they're really wrestling maybe 12.
Right. Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, you take those breaks in the middle to get the count.
One of the falls was on the outside. You don't even see. You just hear a kaboom on the concrete and go, oh, Jamie got another one on Ricky out there. Hit him with the bell. And he gets up and he's all busted open, and everybody eventually gets busted open. Oh, and the start of the match is, because I think it was some interpromotional thing, PG-13 slides in. They each give like Rock Roll a shot from behind, and then they just go to town on Mark Curtis, who you can tell is just dying to go coast to coast. And they just blast them and just literally, like, they're doing like Stone Cold Luthez punches to him, but with hubcaps.
And quote of the podcast, and Mark Curtis, who you know was just dying to go coast to coast.
Oh, yeah, he was. You could tell.
I love it. I'm kind of mad I turned that one off because I put it on and I was like, ah, well, I don't know. I'm gonna keep moving.
Well, that was the thing. A lot of these matches, which I came to enjoy. I don't necessarily enjoy them when we're watching like WWF tees, but like I caught myself watching a lot of pre-match, watching a lot of Lance Russell and Corey Macklin talking about, well, what we got coming up this week and next we got PG-13 coming in. You know, they're the champs. And we got the Smoky Mountain Boys coming in, and I was watching all pre-match stuff.
I had to stop listening to the WCW Saturday Night 2000 commentary because nobody cares.
Oh, I know.
They are doing it is stand up comedy night, WCW 2000 Saturday nights.
Yeah, no, I know. That's the thing. As a guy who likes to listen to commentary while he showers, you definitely don't want that. You want the nice dulcet tones of either a Lance Russell, a Gordon Soul. Jim Ross is good in the shower. That's right, people. We're getting a little erotic right now. Gorilla Mon, choice for the shower, people. That's the type of man you want to hear when you're showering.
Not Larry Zbysko and Scott Hudson.
No, not definitely not Mark Madden. No Disco Inferno guest commentating. None of that.
It was like I was like, oh, this is where Mike Tenay got his "I don't give a fuck" attitude for at some points in TNA, because the one match that I think it was a 3-count match, Mike Tenay could give a fuck.
He's checked out, you would say.
Oh my god, yeah. Him and I think it was Scott Hudson are just doing shtick, and I was like, come on, guys. These guys are working hard out here.
Let me get to this jewel of, and it's not a jewel, but it was a jewel to see and a jewel to find. The PG-13 versus Hardy Boys, which if this is 95, there's no way Jess legal age.
That's true.
Matt's wearing high voltage gear. Jeff's just straight up in black tights and like soccer knee pads. But like, and it's great because it's so great because the comic is like, yeah, these young boys just looking to get a chance. And I was like, oh my gosh, no one has any, like, it's just so crazy to see them so young. And it's basically just a job match. Like, Matt looks okay in the beginning, but literally the hot tag is to Jeff, who just comes in, does like a punch, literally throws like two drop kicks. They say the second one missed, but like, I think it was just bad. And Wolfie was like, no, I'm not selling that. And then they just give him their finish 1-2-3. And I was like, oh yeah, they totally just a squash match.
And was the finish the Tilt-A-Whirl splash?
No. Double Bulldog. 1-2-3. That's right. Yeah, they jobbed him out. They didn't hit their hot finish.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, or the – what's the – I thought their first double team in a lot of these matches is Russian leg sweep drop kick, which is kind of dope at times. And they just use it as like a throwaway. And they're like, eh, Double Bulldog is the finish.
Oh, dude, they've definitely got some weird ones. I don't know if you've ever seen what Wolfie does, this weird like doctor bomb into an elbow drop.
Oh yeah.
I think Jamie at one time like hits a sling blade and I'm like, what's going on?
Early adopter of the sling blade. Jamie Dundee, JC Ice.
Oh, at one point when they were bad guys early on, tell me if you followed this comparison. I was like, oh, they're the Farkases from A Christmas Story. They have yellow eyes.
I'm not sure the footage was good enough ever for me to notice their eyes.
Well, no, they don't, but that was the thing with the Farkases. Remember, he'd be like, they had yellow eyes.
yeah.
But it totally struck me as like, okay, maybe it's not universal. You tell me. I feel like everybody in high school knew like those two kind of ratty dudes in the corner that you kind of didn't want to mess with, but they were kind of punks, but you know, they were just from the other side of the tracks. Like, I don't know. I found them very relatable. I was like, oh, everybody knew two guys like that in high school.
Or every 90s TV show had that character or those characters.
Yeah. Like, they're the two guys who are outside asking you to, trying to bum cigarettes off people at, like, the gas station.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was great. I don't know. And then, I don't know. I don't that gimmick, I don't know why it just stood out to me because it just seems so universal. I don't know. Everybody was like, oh, they rapper gimmick. I go, yeah, but they're just You know, I love that they never gave up the everything. We're taking it back to the hood. The hood. We're from the hood. We're taking it to the hood. We're from the hood. We're going to bring the hood to here. The South will rise again, but we're from the hood.
Yeah, yeah. But that's part of it, though. Those kids or those guys that you knew in high school, that was like but that was them. It's white trash, but it's like a weird extension of white trash.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We all knew white trash kids, but there was always like the one super athletic one and the one loudmouth one, and it was like, "Oh, that's why I think they were such a good team." I found it funny watching because in my head I'm like, oh, obviously there's the big powerhouse. Here's the little wrestler technician, maybe high flyer. And then you're like, oh, absolutely not. Wolfie does everything. And Jamie's just there to get heat, basically. But, like, Wolfie could if he wanted on his own. But it's just like Jamie's just got it to another level. Like, he's just there to stir the pot. I was like, right? Do you agree with me that Wolfie, oddly, was both the strong one, the athletic one, the fast one, the technical one?
He's the Davey Boy Smith.
I guess
that's what we talked about with Davey Boy. He was the big one, but he was also kind of also the fast one and also kind of the technical one.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, because then my brain instantly goes to them comparing JC to Dynamite. I was like, well, it's definitely not that type of mix.
Well, I'm sure there's comparisons that could be made.
Oh,
oh Jesus. All right.
In-ring.
Let's talk about what made PG-13 so great.
I'll start. I think, and I don't know if this necessarily makes them a great team or it makes their team great. Tell me if you agree. I think they're 1,000% better together than apart. Like some teams you think like, well, if they were apart, how would things have changed? Would they not have gotten as far? I don't think they get anywhere apart. But together, they become oddly one of the more influential tag teams when you really break it down as far as their character, which led to, like we said, they walk so a lot of people could run after them. And like I said earlier, oddly, they're a jigsaw that works. You know what I mean? Luckily, Wolfie is athletic and strong and technical and can do his, you know, get his own heat. But then Jamie's just kind of like his dad. I don't want to say once in a generation, but like how many other Jamie Dundees were there, do you remember, from the 90s? None, right. Really.
Right.
So I don't know if they're a great tag team, but they achieved greatness. Think about it. They were literally two. I don't know if it's a shoot, but it definitely seemed like they were just two kids who grew up back in the hood of Tennessee, and they went all over the world. They were champions of Japan.
Yeah. And like, you know, there's people who wrestled for all three, but like, what's that list look like of guys who wrestled for WWF, ECW, and WCW in the 90s? What's that list look like? It's not crazy huge, and those are the three biggest promotions in the world during like one of arguably the biggest times in wrestling, and they wrestled for all three. I think what made them great is kind of what we talked about earlier. They were so versatile, yet they were just so Memphis. At the end of the day, they brought that Memphis style to WWF. They brought it to ECW. They brought it to WCW while having that, like, they were an entity all their own. There wasn't anything like PG-13, which is why I think everyone took a flyer on them at one point, because you look at them and you go, yeah, we don't got nothing like that. There's, like, they're not taking a spot from nobody because that's their own spot. And you're 100% right. I don't think that works, but I don't think either of that works by itself. So PG-13 probably helped the two of them. Correct me if I'm wrong. Don't they not like each other in real life?
I just think as they grew up, they grew a little bit apart.
Okay.
And, like, from the interviews I've seen, Wolfie's kind of just like a normal guy now, and then Jamie's just continued to get crazier.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Now, how would we defeat the tag team of PG-13. Can we still do this? Can I have that match tomorrow?
It's technically still on the table. It's a possibility. They're both alive and kicking. But the one thing I definitely, obviously, as we've learned, the only way I want to wrestle them is if I'm the good guy and they're the bad guy, because then all I have to do is just hit moves and moves and moves and moves, because all they're going to want to do is take moves and moves and moves and moves. So I think they have a lot of wacky double teams, we may have more, but I don't know about that when I think about it. Ours are better. We have more high-powered double teams. So we can hit them, and we just got to hope they don't outsmart us. We got to watch out for the powder.
Here's what I'm saying. Here's how we beat them. Because we see their shit coming. Because we know those Memphis spots inside and out, and we won't be fooled by them. That's how we beat them. If they're going to beat us, they got to do it by out-wrestling us. They're not going to trick us. We've seen all these tricks. We use a lot of these tricks.
Okay, and I've got it. I've got another, I don't know if I'd call it an ace up our sleeve. We'll call it a half of an ace up our sleeve. If need be, we do have someone to counteract their manager.
Okay.
And both their manager and our manager have said it's okay. We could bring Midget Swoggle to take on Midget Jamie and then counteract their manager, and then we've at least taken that out, and then we just, once again, we watch out for the powder, and we just try to make sure to see everything coming. Or if they've got a female valet, we just got to counteract. I don't like – they've had a lot of people in their corner, so we got to make sure that's also an X factor we need to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's – I wonder – I looked – I mean, if you look on their cage match, the last time they teamed was like 2012, so – been almost a decade. I don't necessarily see it happening, but man, I would love to wrestle PG-13.
Right. Yeah, I don't see it happening. But if we could, it'd be a dandy.
Once again, I'm not sure we've wrestled or we've covered a team recently that I quickly related to so fast.
Yeah, the only thing that did make me, like, I related to their size, but I go, they were wrestling still in the time of giants, or at least on the big time. I guess in Memphis it wasn't that bad. I was like, at least we don't have to battle as big as men as they did. We don't have to face the smoking guns, who are big men.
Holy crap, are they big. Especially,
dude, freaking, like I said, Road Dogg, even Tracy's a big dude. You know what I mean?
I know. That's what I'm saying. They were a cruiserweight tag team. They were. Before cruiserweight tag teams were a thing, PG-13 was a thing.
Yeah, I think that's how we got them. We're just better at cruiserweight because we've been doing it, because luckily they brought it out.
I'm sure even if they squared up with Scott Taylor and Brian Christopher, you'd be like, man, PG-13 is small.
Oh, I'm sure.
All right. This is going way longer than I thought it would. So we got to stop doing this. I could talk about PG-13 all day. Let's go watch USWA TV episodes.
Bro, I'm just saying, it was a team that was a long time on the list. I've been wanting to get to them, but I wasn't trying to push it, and I'm glad it came. I'm glad it got an hour worth of us talking, because they were that damn good. We'll keep gusting once I say adios. Guess what? We're still going to talk about how good they are.
And we're going to start a new podcast starting tomorrow where we live watch USWA TV episodes and react accordingly.
Yeah, we'll do watch along on our Patreon. You can follow us on our Patreon. Blah, 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 blah. Use code blah, blah, blah.
Bro, I barely know how to use Twitter. You're telling me I don't even know what a Patreon is. For the longest time, I swear to God, when people were talking about Patreon, I thought they were talking about tequila.
You meant like Patron, you goof. No, I want to bring back my new thing. I want to bring back hotlines. Twitter is just too gross, but if I go on a hotline, I could just get the news and I'm done.
Nice. All right, so join us next week on the hotline, where we'll talk about another team and probably more USWA. We should start a hotline. Fuck a Patreon.
Oh, no, but I'm just saying, think of this. We just give you now an hour's length hotline message for free, folks, for free.
Not $2.99 a minute.
No, that would have been really expensive by this point.
So hit us on the hotline next week. And until then,
adios.